From WJCT Studios in Jacksonville, Florida, I'm Ray Hollister.
I'm Tom Braun.
I'm Kevin Clark.
And I'm Aaron Edelson.
And this is Deemable Tech, the show that brings you the latest news in tech, computers, gadgets, the internet, and social networking, and then we answer your tech questions. If you need help with your desktop, laptop, tablet, or mobile phone, we're here to help. If you have a question that you want to ask Deemable Tech, give us a call at 904-372-DEEM. That's 904-372-3336. Or you can send us an email at questions@deemable.com. Post a message on our Facebook wall at facebook.com/deemable. Or send us a tweet at Deemable. So this last Thursday, Microsoft sent out invitations to select members of the media. Did you guys get an invitation?
No, I didn't. Think mine got lost
somewhere. Oh, man, I'm sorry. No, I didn't either. Sadly, nobody at Deemable Tech was invited to attend a media event on June 18th, Monday.
Last Monday, right,
at 3:30 p.m. in Los Angeles. And that was the extent of the message. It was in plain text, which is kind of weird because usually press releases are, you know, all graphic-y and pretty.
Yeah.
And the weirdest part was there was no location and no details about the event. And Tom, you mentioned this to us last week in the show. What the message did say was that this will be a major Microsoft announcement. You will not want to miss it. So, following the secret message instructions that they received from Microsoft, the invitees made the trek out to Los Angeles to find out what Microsoft was up to. And on Monday, we were finally told where the event was going to be held. They didn't actually find out until Monday when they were in Los Angeles.
Nice.
Where it was even going to be at. So this was kind of out of the ordinary for most companies. Usually you find out, you know, months in advance and there's a build up to it, but it's like out of nowhere. It's like, oh, secret. Mm-hmm. You got to go see what they're doing. So after having let the mystery simmer for a few days, Microsoft finally announced the Surface, a tablet device designed and manufactured by Microsoft. And that's pretty much all they told us. So, Aaron, what was this device? What was it that they announced?
Well, one of the big things that they mentioned is going to be made of a material called VaporMag. So in kind of an answer to the iPad's, you know, aluminum-based case, they're trying to make one that's out of a lightweight material, magnesium, which, interestingly enough, is the same material used for mag lights.
Okay.
Sweet.
Which, as you know, many people recall, the big ones were sometimes used as weapons
Billy
and stuff.
Clubs.
So,
a tablet that can double as a weapon.
And ninjas everywhere rejoice.
And they're going to have two 10.6-inch tablets, basically, is what they announced, the Surface.
One's going to be running the Windows RT, which is going to be an ARM processor, which, for those that don't know, that's the typical processor used in a lot of mobile phones and smartphone devices and,
right,
and tablets currently. So you're going to have kind of a light version, if you will. Then they're going to have the full-blown Windows 8 Pro, which will be supposedly, as of now, a dual-core Intel Core i5 processor specs. You know, still
right,
kind of shaky on that.
And the Windows RT, it only runs the Metro apps. It doesn't run the regular desktop apps.
Correct.
Like we're familiar with in Windows 7.
Right. The interesting thing Microsoft's done with the Windows 8 is kind of done kind of a split operating system. You have the RT version, which, is, like you said, runs the Metro apps, and then the full version of Windows 8, which Windows 8 will run the Metro apps as well. So
right,
if you have the Windows 8 version of the tablet, you'll be able to run both the mobile apps as well as any standard desktop Windows software. It's
so,
not just a tablet. It's actually a mobile computer.
Right. So kind of to translate it into an analogy that would work, it'd be like having an iPad that can also run Mac OS programs.
Correct. And that's kind of an interesting thing, is that the Windows Surface with Windows 8 Pro will actually be, as far as I can tell, the first device where you'll actually be able to run apps that you've written on the device.
Okay.
So,
wow,
you know, whereas as a Mac, you'd have to install an app on the device that was written in OS X.
Right.
And same thing with Android. You can program it in, you know, Linux or Microsoft or another operating system and then run it on an Android device. With the Windows 8 tablet, you'd actually be able to write Metro apps and then run them on the device itself.
Okay. And one of the cool things I saw was the cover for the Surface. The consumer model has a cover that really clicks into it nicely, kind of like the smart cover with the iPad, but it really felt really solid. or it sounded really solid. They said they designed it after like a luxury car, the sound for it, which is always funny to think that they're engineering sounds.
Yeah.
But
hey, it shows that Microsoft's finally paying attention to design details.
Exactly.
You know, Apple thinks about these things. Microsoft needs to start thinking about
it. That's great. Yeah, it's nice to see somebody out there doing that. And for the consumer model, the Surface for Windows RT model, it has a multi-touch keyboard built into the cover. So it's a flat screen almost, but the keys are kind of raised.
So, textured or something.
Yeah. So it's still a touch screen, sort of. But it makes it easier to touch type. They say you can touch type a lot faster on it. So, and the Surface for Windows 8 Pro model actually has tactile or clicky keyboards on it with just a tiny, like a millimeter and a half range of motion, but enough to where it really feels like you're typing on something.
Some feedback.
Yeah.
Yeah, I actually hit a button.
And it magnetically attaches to the screen to protect it. And what's cool is both of the keyboards have accelerometers in them. So when you flip the keyboard around to the back of the tablet, it knows that you're on the back of the tablet. So
shut down the keyboard.
It shuts the keyboard off so you don't have random text on there.
It's also it's one of those funny things that it's so small, yet people are excited about. It's got a kickstand on the back.
Yeah, they've made a big deal out of that. And that is really cool. I mean,
yeah.
I got an iPad, and that's one of the most frustrating things is you got to have a case or a stand to make it work. Now,
just kind of an interesting thing, kind of mentioning that you have, you know, the iPad, you have to get a case for it. Mm-hmm. It seems that there's kind of this split reactions about the device. You have half the people saying, you know, it's got all these cool things. Well, I can get that for an iPad. Well, Now you can have it built in. And then the other half going, it can't decide what it is. Is it a laptop or is it a tablet?
Right.
And everybody's going, but everybody's doing this already to their iPad. They take it home. They put it in a case that has a flip-out keyboard and a stand. So mm-hmm. why not just go ahead and have a tablet with built-in flip-out keyboard and a built-in stand?
I mean, I've experienced this with my iPad to create documents. I mean, Pages on iPad is great, but without a keyboard, it's really cumbersome. So having a keyboard built into the cover like that would just be fantastic.
Well, and this is the first one I've seen that has a trackpad, too. Most of them, you have a keyboard, and then you have get, you know, a trackpad or a little Bluetooth mouse or something to control your cursor. This one actually has it all built in, so you get the best benefits of a laptop while still maintaining a tablet form.
So what else is what's under the hood
Well,
that we know?
The Surface for Windows 8 Pro is going to have a dual core Intel Core i5. The, like Aaron was saying, the Surface for Windows RT model is going to have a NVIDIA Tegra ARM processor. So quite a big difference in processing power there.
Yeah, absolutely.
The Surface for RT, how much storage space did they say that one's going to have?
I think it's going to be a 32 or 64. And then I believe the Pro models were talking about either a 64 gigabyte or 128 gigabyte built-in storage.
Yeah, and I saw the consumer model is going to have a micro SD slot, so you could bump it up another 32 gigs. But the Pro one is going to have a micro SD XC slot, which can go all the way up to 2 terabytes. So that would be a nice upgrade.
That would be.
Both of them have USB.
A little bit more power to the Pro model.
Yeah. Both of them are going to have USB, full-size USB, which is really awesome.
Which is important, and we'll talk about that later.
Yeah, okay. And let's see. Now, the problem is what they didn't tell us. Kevin, what didn't they tell us at this announcement?
Well, I think they didn't tell us a lot. A lot of stuff people really want to know. They didn't tell us anything about the prices. Some really details about those specifications we just talked about. And what they really didn't tell us is a release date.
Yeah. I mean, what did they say? It's going to be out in when Windows 8 comes out.
Exactly.
Okay. So when Windows 8 comes out, then we'll know. Mm-hmm. Well, when's Windows 8 coming out? Autumn?
Say that Windows 8 is definitely soon, because they're now advertising it when you buy a new PC, you can get the discounted coupon for Windows 8.
Oh, so you'll be able to upgrade it.
It's a $15 upgrade. So you buy a computer with Windows 7 now through, I believe, January, and you'll get the automatic, you can purchase a copy of Windows 8 for only $15 more.
That's ironic, considering usually, the news that we're going to talk about later about Windows Phone.
When, once they release that, typically with their previous versions of their operating system, I've seen that it's imminent that they're about to drop the new OS at that point.
Yeah, and I know that they didn't tell us anything about the specs.
Or the price.
They told us it's going to be an Intel chip and an ARM chip, mm-hmm. so we have no idea how fast an ARM chip or how fast an Intel chip.
Right.
Yeah, and the prices. I know Steve Ballmer said that it would be competitive with a comparable ARM tablet or Intel Ultrabook class PC.
And that can be anywhere from $200 to $2,000.
Exactly. I mean, that narrows it down. Thanks. You cleared it all up for us. Now we know. The Windows RT, Surface for Windows RT, will be available when Windows 8 comes out. And they said it's going to be about 3 months after that is when the Pro model will come out. So just what's your gut reaction to this? Like, how do you guys feel about this news?
I am really excited. I try not to be too much of a Microsoft fanboy, but I mean, to me, I look at especially the Pro tablet, and I'm like, this is a tablet that can do everything a laptop can do. Finally,
true.
You know? So for me, that's cool. Cause that's why I don't have a tablet right now. Maybe I'm more of a power user and I need what a laptop offers.
Yeah.
So for me, I'm excited.
Kevin?
I'm pretty excited myself. I mean, they've been working on this technology for, what, close to nearing 10 years now. You know, we've been hearing about Microsoft Surface, and it's never really become mainstream for, you know, typical users. And I'm just glad to see it finally coming to fruition, even if it is far after, you know, Google and Apple have put out their devices. I look forward to seeing it.
Well, sorry to jump you there, Aaron, but you know, I restrained myself from getting excited because this is Microsoft we're talking about. They just have a history of products that they never bring to market. And that being said, if it ever does exist, I want one. The saddest point in the whole presentation for me, though, was Steven Sinofsky, the president of Windows. He was trying to demonstrate the entertainment apps on the Surface, and it apparently froze up. He tried several times to get it to work, and then he finally gives up and grabs another tablet, and it really reminded me of Bill Gates' Windows 98 blue screen of death.
During that demo of Windows 98 back in the day.
Yeah, I mean, but to be fair, it's not fully baked yet, but we got to take a quick break. When we get back, we'll talk more about the Microsoft event and also Windows Phone 8, so stay tuned. If you missed an episode of Deemable Tech, or you just want to hear the show again, you can catch our podcast on our website at deemable.com/podcast. That's deemable.com. Also, be sure to follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/deemable, or on Twitter at deemable. You can also find us on Google+. Just search for Deemable Tech. Welcome back to Deemable Tech. Before the break, we were talking about the Windows or Microsoft Surface announcement, and I was talking about how when Steven Sinofsky was demonstrating the entertainment apps, it froze up, and that was kind of sad. My wife was watching it with me, and she just totally said that it was over. Like, she was not interested at all at that point.
Ooh.
And I kind of felt the same way. But then this happened. Acer made an announcement. The senior vice president, Oliver Ahrens, spoke with a reporter from Reuters and said, "I don't think it'll be successful because you cannot be a hardware player with two products," which that was a kind of ironic statement, considering most hardware players have at least two or more products. But anyways, he also said that instead of enhancing the user experience for Win 8, they open a new battlefield, Ahrens said. And he also said that, "I worry that this will lead in a into a defocus internally for Microsoft, and then we will have to suffer because we're working with their products. Now, as soon as I heard that, as soon as I heard that the CEO or this vice president was like, oh, this is going to fail, this is going to be terrible, then I got excited. Because anytime a competitor tells the media that something is going to fail, it's because they're scared.
Totally.
Now, for a couple examples, Steve Ballmer in 2007, his reaction to the iPhone, there's no chance that the iPhone is going to get any significant market share, no chance. He also said that the businesses would never adopt the iPhone because it didn't have a physical keyboard.
Oh, Steve Ballmer.
And now, of course, Apple's iPhone business is larger than all of Microsoft.
Wow.
And also, ironically, too, Microsoft's Windows Phone 7 has many phones that only have virtual keyboards. So, yeah, history came back to bite him for that one. And even Android chief Andy Rubin, he reacted to Siri saying, I don't believe that your phone should be an assistant. And now, of course, Google is rumored to be announcing a new feature at the I.O. Developers Conference called, wait for it, Assistant.
Da-da-da.
Yeah. So, you know, and any time a competitor is like, oh, yeah, that's not going to happen. That won't work. It's like, oh, so you're scared. Because otherwise, why do you go to the media and talk about that?
Mm-hmm.
You know, you don't need to be talking about that. So you were telling me that, though, Tom, you were saying that this reminded you of the Nexus and how Google handled the Nexus.
Yeah. You know, Google, with partnering with Samsung and doing the Nexus tablet, you know, it became a catalyst for a lot of other Android licensees. They basically were saying, like, this is what you can do with this. This is how it should be done. Come on, guys, step up your game. And it's possible that, you know, that's Microsoft's thinking here. Because one of the concerns that a lot of Microsoft's partners are going to have is, you know, they're like, well, we're making tablets for Windows. What if Microsoft's making tablets for Windows, you know, aren't they our competitors now?
Right.
I'm sure that's, you know, Acer's vice president's concern.
With anything else, I mean, competition is going to split the market into several groups. So, you know, you have Windows has this great device. It's obviously a high-end device. It's made with a nice case. It has the flip-out keyboard. It's got the flip-out stand.
Sure.
So then you have the option for other, you know, manufacturers to come in at a lower price point and say, hey, we'll take out the stand. We'll take out the Vapor Mag. We'll take out the keyboard.
That's true.
And just give you a plain old Windows RT tablet for, you know, $200 or $150.
Yeah. And the same thing, like you're saying with Nexus, Google never intended to or never wanted to be a competitor.
Mm-hmm.
They just wanted to raise the bar and say, okay, look what you can do with this. Step it up. And yeah, so you get both ends. You get the people who go for the lower end product and the higher end product.
So that's what I would speculate on this. And there's been other people saying that, including, ironically, Acer's founder, Stan Shi, who said this was
that's
exactly,
an ironic contrast.
Yeah, exactly. Microsoft's strategy. So apparently he needs to talk to his vice president.
Maybe they're not on the same page.
I don't know.
Now, in the keynote, they talked about that. The reason that Microsoft was building this is because they wanted a platform to show it off.
Mm-hmm.
And they compared it to the way that when Windows 1 came out, they created the mouse.
Mm-hmm.
And I was thinking as I'm watching this, because I already knew the news when I watched the keynote, I'm like, yeah, you know, you did need to bring a mouse out. Nobody else was making a mouse at the time. But, you know, the mouse didn't run on Windows.
Yeah.
You didn't need to buy a mouse to use Windows. Mm-hmm. You could do without it at the time.
Yes. That's true.
And, you know, it didn't run on the mouse.
Mm-hmm.
So this kind of, I don't know, it does kind of supersede their competitors.
Yeah.
I think it's kind of also a way to get people connected to the Xbox. I really think that they're going to start pushing more Xbox Live content.
Mm-hmm.
And you might even see something along the lines of you can do Xbox Live content, but it'll be locked to the Surface devices, maybe.
Yeah.
You
know? And speaking of the Xbox, I know game developers for the Xbox are kind of excited about a feature we mentioned earlier, which seems so small, but which is so important, the USB port. Basically, the fact that it has a USB port means you could hook an Xbox controller up to this tablet. And I mean, how awesome
that would be fun.
Would that be? Yeah. So.
Yeah. And Aaron, we were talking before the show that how amazing would it be if you could play your Xbox games on the Surface.
And that could be a long-term goal for Microsoft, is that kind of getting into this, then start linking the Xbox Live content, start having the Metro apps on your device and on your Xbox.
Mm-hmm.
The next logical thing would be to stream stuff back. So if you can stream movies and content from your Xbox, why not be able to stream games as well and kind of use your Surface as a mobile screen?
Absolutely.
And possibly even the controller as well, if you have, you know, on-screen controls.
Well, let's see. Microsoft also had another big announcement this last week, and that was the announcement of Windows Phone 8.
Yep.
Now, the interesting part was they didn't disclose all of the end-user features. That was one thing that they said right at the beginning of the presentation. Is like, okay, we're not going to talk about everything that Windows Phone 8 can do. It's going to do a lot of amazing, cool things, but that's not what this is about. And I'm like, okay, you invited the media out so we could just hang out and you know, talk about the developer stuff. Okay, cool. One of the cool things, if you use Windows Phone 7, you know that your home screen tiles are pretty much static. You can't change them or move them or resize them. And now you'll be able to resize them, which is nice. Mm-hmm. You can change the colors too. So like if you want it to be a different color scheme, you can change it around.
Pink for me usually.
Yeah, pink. Yeah, that's a good color for you. And also, Windows Phone 8 is going to support more screen sizes, so that'll support bigger screens and different resolutions. That'll be nice. One of the nice things I saw was VoIP, and Voice over Internet Protocol integration into the system, so you'll be able to make a call over 3G or over Wi-Fi using Skype.
Sweet.
And it won't be a separate app that you have to load. You'll just call a number and, you know, pick that you want to do it over the internet instead of over the cell phone. They're adding SD card support, because right now Windows Phone 7 devices don't support SD cards. So you'll have some expandable memory in the new Windows Phone 8 phones. And I guess Windows took a
page from Apple there.
Page from Apple with a Nokia Maps has replaced Bing Maps in Windows Phone 8. And they're getting turn-by-turn directions, and they're going to have offline maps, which is fantastic. Yeah,
yeah, that could be really helpful.
And one of my favorite things was Microsoft Wallet they announced as well. You're going to be able to save your credit cards and your debit cards in Microsoft Wallet, and loyalty and membership cards, daily deals like Groupon, and also it's going to support NFC, near field communications. So it's kind of like Passbook or Google Wallet and all these other, everyone's trying to make this happen now where we can pay for things with our phone.
There you go. Google Wallet, Microsoft Wallet. I wonder where they ripped that off.
Exactly. At least they didn't call it Microsoft Passbook. So just rip off one company.
Yeah. Or one at a time.
Microsoft
one at a time.
Pass Wallet.
Ooh.
But there was a problem with it that a lot of people weren't happy about. Aaron, can you tell us about that?
They rewrote the entire operating system from the ground up.
Yeah.
Some people may be aware and some may not, but Windows 7 was based off of the older Windows CE, and that was the operating system that powered the old Windows mobile phones, handheld PCs, and actually a lot of ATMs.
Yeah.
The Windows 8 is actually based off of the new Windows 8 desktop operating system, much in the same way that Apple built their iOS using the same kernel as the Mac OS X. So for the good news, it makes it easier for app developers to make a Windows Phone 8 app if they're already making a Windows 8 app for the desktop. So you have a little bit more consistency of apps across the desktop and mobile platforms.
That's the good news. What's the bad news, Aaron?
Well, of course, on the other hand, it's a completely different operating system, so the existing models won't be able to get the update, including the flagship, the Nokia Lumina 900 that just came out a few months ago.
So if I just dropped a bunch of cash for a Windows 7 phone?
You have a working phone. That will not get any updates. Actually, that's not true. They did come up with Windows Phone 7.8. So they're going to make it where it looks like Windows 8 or Windows Phone 8.
So you can fool your friends.
Yeah. So it'll look the same. It won't run the new Windows Phone 8 apps. And usually when you do something like this, it forces you to not be able to support the older apps. Mm-hmm. So like the Windows Phone 7 apps wouldn't work on a Windows Phone 8 device. Mm-hmm. But apparently they're saying that it'll work. So I don't know if they're going to have some sort of emulator running where you can, you know, like when Palm moved to WebOS, they added this Palm Classic app where you could run old Palm apps on it. And it wasn't that great. It worked. It was decent. And if you were dependent on Palm apps, you could use it. But I don't have a lot of high hopes for that, that it's going to be that great of an experience.
Yeah, this is kind of a, this is a thing that, you know, I think users can really feel betrayed by something like this. I have a friend who got a Windows 7 phone late last year, loves it, you know, and I can't imagine how he feels, you know, to hear that, hey, guess what, buddy? You're being left behind with Windows 8. These new phones, you're not going to be able to upgrade.
Yeah.
That hurts users.
I mean, when HP did their Think Beyond event back in February of whenever ago, I guess it was 2010, I remember I was so excited. Because, WebOS 2.0 is coming out. And the whole time they never mentioned the fact that it wasn't going to the old phones. And they had promised us. And I tell you what, you know, going from Palm OS to WebOS was okay. Mm-hmm. That, you know, that hurt a little bit. You know, we had to adjust. But same thing as like from Windows Phone 6 to 7. Windows Mobile 6.5 to 7. It was like, okay, well, you know, times are changing. We got to go. But when they went from 1 to 2 in WebOS, and we didn't get it, it was like, you just totally... And there was this massive hemorrhaging of users. They just completely abandoned the platform.
Right.
And I'm afraid that's going to happen here.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm excited. It was the right thing to do, I think, for them to go with the Windows 8 Core. But that's going to tick a lot of people off.
Mm-hmm.
So, let's see. They are also claiming that... they're going to allow users
To manually download updates to Windows 8. You know, carriers like Verizon, in my case, can sometimes be a little slow on the ball getting those updates out there. Microsoft is claiming that users who are interested in the latest and greatest can actually go ahead and manually update it. Now, we'll see if the carriers actually allow that to happen. I can imagine that's going to be a battle going on in some boardrooms somewhere.
Yeah, I mean, that's one thing that Apple led with iOS is that, you know, carriers, you don't tell us what to do. We tell you what to do.
Mm-hmm.
But they're talking about maybe that'll, like, void their warranty and you're on your own.
Yeah.
We'll see.
We'll see how it
hopefully that works
out.
Well, let's stop talking about depressing Microsoft news. And, let's talk about Facebook. Facebook is getting a new feature called, well, they originally called it Friendshake. But now they're calling it Find Friends Nearby. And what it does is it allows you to friend someone who's near you. So what you do...
Like physically near you.
Yes, like in the same room. Like if you've ever been at a party or gathering and you're like, oh, I got to friend you on Facebook. But then it's like John Smith and you have to sort through 10,000 John Smiths to find this person. So you end up like going through your friends and your friends' friends and you finally find the person. What you can do is... On the Facebook app, if you open the menu and go to apps and then go down to find friends, other tools, then find friends nearby, or you can just go to fb.com/FFN, it'll show you everyone in the same area as you who is on Facebook at the same time.
Who's also got that page open.
Right, who also has that page open. Right. So you just go, oh, that's the person I'm looking for. Which, that would be a fantastic thing if it does pick up popularity. Obviously, it's way too complicated to get to right now.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, kind of like we talked off air, that there's very soon going to be a bunch of third-party developers jumping on this and saying, hey, we have a nifty little button that you can add as a widget to your desktop or as a shortcut on the iOS. That you just click this button and it instantly takes you exactly to the page you need to be.
Yeah, and that'll be fantastic because I've always loved the concept of a virtual business card. Palm OS back in the day had the infrared business card, and that never really caught on because everybody didn't carry a Palm OS device. There was Bump, and that you were telling me before that didn't even work when you tried it.
That was me.
I had a lot of people that got on Bump, and I'm sure Kevin, you're saying the same thing, that you tried it and it didn't work.
Yeah, well, I was wondering how it even worked, whether it was Bluetooth or Wi-Fi or how, what kind of protocol was this even using? Like, I didn't know how to use it. I mean, it told you. But, you know, I'd do the Bump and it never transferred anything.
Yeah, so. I would get it to sync up. It would click, you know, lock onto the other person's phone, but it would just never transfer any data. It just didn't do what it was supposed to do. And I think that's kind of why a lot of people didn't use it.
Yeah, I mean,
if
that's...
text can't do it, how's anybody going to?
And it was always the thing where I was like, oh, do you got Bump? Oh, okay, you don't have Bump. Okay, well, if you download it, then we can... Oh, forget it. Just let me write it down. It was at that point, it was pointless.
Well,
but
actually,
everyone's on Facebook, so if this gets...
Yeah, if this catches on, it'll be awesome.
It's ubiquitous. Everybody's on Facebook.
And if they put it into their Facebook apps for your phones, that's going to be even better because you don't have to whip out your laptop every single time you want to friend somebody on Facebook. You just pull out your phones, ask somebody to be your friend. They accept you right then and there without having to log in and go crazy with it.
So, and then that would be fantastic. There was some other news about PBS app coming out.
Yeah, so LeVar Burton fans can rejoice.
What a transition.
Good transition. Thank you. I was thinking the same thing.
Reading Rainbow is coming back to the Woo-hoo! iPad. Yeah. The show's...
to the iPad?
Yes,
so it's not coming back to PBS?
No.
Oh.
To the iPad.
Crud.
The show was on the air for 26 years on PBS, but it ended in 2006. As I'm sure you're all aware. But LeVar Burton is still out there, and he still wants to encourage kids to read, even if it's on a different medium than they've used in the past. So the Reading Rainbow app will allow kids' books to be browsed and purchased through the app itself. Jordy LaForge, LeVar Burton, will also be posting video updates and clips from the old show. The app is available now, so take a look. It's in an iPad.
Nice. So you were saying before... Will this be hooked up with iBooks?
I believe the purchases of the books happen in-app.
Oh, okay. So it'll be like its own little book directory. Thing.
Yeah.
Okay. That's interesting. So. Let's see.
It's funny that you say that because I was actually just kind of going through my wife just got a Kindle and I've got a Droid, and Droid has the ebooks, you know, and I mean, you go into all these different libraries, nothing's all integrated.
That's true. It's like 15 different places.
Everybody's
That's what I was going to ask you. Is it on Android as well or just iPad right now?
Nope, just the iPad, and just the iPad, not the iPhone.
Oh, that's a shame. Well, we've got to take another break, and after we come back from our break, we are going to answer some emails.
Cool.
So stick around. This is Deemable Tech. Up next, we'll be taking your calls, reading your emails, and answering your questions. If you have a tech question for Deemable Tech, give us a call at 904-372-DEEM. That's 904-372-3336. Or send us an email to questions@deemable.com. Welcome back to Deemable Tech. Let's take some of your emails. Let's see. We've got one from Emily here. Tom, will you grab that?
Sure. It says, my coworker lost her iPhone at work the other day. She was in a panic because she had thought someone had stolen it. Fortunately, someone turned it in later on in the day after they found it in the break room. Anyway, I thought I heard there was some way to find an iPhone if you lost it. Is there a way? And if so, how does it work?
Ah, well, actually, you're right, Emily. There is a way. Any iOS device, that's an iPhone or iPod Touch or iPad, that is running iOS 4.2 or higher has a feature called Find My iPhone. With Find My iPhone, you can see on a map where your iPhone is. You can remotely lock the phone with a PIN number, or you can send a message to your iPhone that will show on the screen like, hey, I lost my iPhone, call me at this other number if you find it, even if it's locked. You can also make it beep, and it'll beep really loudly, even if you have the ringer set on mute, which is nice. And you can even wipe your phone and delete everything on it, you know, in case you're a spy or a secret agent.
I am.
Oh, good. Well, you're not a good one, apparently.
Thanks.
Which, it's really a great feature. There's been some stories in the news about it. There was even an 8-year-old who busted robbers who had stolen over $350,000 worth of merchandise from various houses. What happened is they robbed his house. They took his iPad, and he got on Find My iPhone, found the guys, found the hotel that they were staying at, called the cops.
Nice.
They sent him after him, and they found all this loot that they had had. So,
and this kid was 8 years old. Once again, proving that kids really do know how to use technology better than adults.
Usually, yeah. Now, what you do to find out if you have Find My iPhone turned on is tap to open the Settings app on your iPhone or iOS device, and then tap on iCloud, which is right under General at the bottom of the first screen. Then scroll down until you see the listing for Find My iPhone, and make sure that the switch is turned to on. If it's not, go ahead and switch it on. You'll get a pop-up that says, this enables Find My iPhone features, including ability to show the location of this iPhone on a map, allow or cancel, and then, of course, you'll want to click allow. Now, if you open the Settings app and there's no iCloud option, obviously you don't have a 4.2. So if you can upgrade your device, go ahead and upgrade it. If not, well, you're stuck. You don't have that feature. But now here's the fun part. What you do at that point, and you can do this at any point, just to test it out and find out, is go to iCloud.com. That's iCloud.com on a computer, and sign into the website with your Apple ID. This is the ID that you use when you buy something on iTunes or in the App Store.
Mm-hmm.
And once the page loads, then click on the Find My iPhone icon. And the web page will open to a map showing you where your iPhone is. And it's really accurate. I was surprised the first time I tried it. It showed it right there in my apartment. And when I zoomed in, it was literally in my apartment of the apartment building. Looked like it was in my room.
Spooky.
So it was really good.
That's awesome.
Now, on the map, there'll be a dot. You click the dot and then click the eye, and you'll get a menu to play sound or to send a message to your phone, remote lock or remote wipe. And, feel free to play with it. You know, go in there and check it out.
Well, probably except for remote wipe.
Yeah, don't do that, because that will wipe out your entire iPhone. It's really nice because, you know, if my daughter takes off with my iPhone and loses it, I can just go on there and, you know, beep, 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 beep. Oh,
that's
there
cool.
It is. Go
that's
find
really
it.
Cool.
So you can also say you're not at a computer, or, you know, you're out somewhere. You can also go to someone else's iPhone or iPad and download the free Find My iPhone app and log in with your Apple ID and do the same thing. So in that case, you know, if you had an iPhone there, Emily, you could have let this person log into your iPhone and find their iPhone. Yeah. So if you do actually lose your iPhone, here's what you should do. First off, go immediately to iCloud.com or find a friend that has an iOS device, download the Find My iPhone app, and then log into the website or the app, and then regardless of whether you think your iPhone was stolen or not, lock it. Mm-hmm. Do that immediately.
Yep, first thing.
And there's two reasons why. First of all, a smart criminal might remember to turn off Find My iPhone. If they're savvy, they might know to go in there and shut it off.
Mm-hmm.
And also, if it's a completely innocent person who just, you know, found your iPhone laying there on the table, they might miss the message that you're about to send because they were poking around your phone trying to figure out who you were. So after you lock it, then if you suspect that you just lost your phone, send a message and a beep to your iPhone. Hopefully whoever sees it will return it to you. Now, if that doesn't work, or if you know your iPhone's been stolen, just call the police and tell them where the iPhone is. And then, of course, you know, step back and let them do their job. Aaron, does Android have a similar built-in feature, or are there any apps that do this, the same thing?
Yeah, Android's a little bit more third-party, of course, than the iPhones generally, and they do have several third-party apps out now that do almost the exact same thing.
Okay.
One of the popular ones is Where's My Droid. It has a free version that'll allow you to send a text message to your phone with an activation word that'll make the phone ring at full volume and provide your droid's location. They also have wheresmydroid.com where you can use all of the features there. The paid version, it's like $3.99, can remote lock your phone and wipe the device and also the SD card and even activate the application from a landline phone. So it gives the user basically the same types of controls. And something that this app can do that Find My iPhone can't is that the app will text or notify you on Where's My Droid if the SIM card is removed.
Oh. Nice.
Not really useful too much for some people that you know are running non-SIM card phones like Verizon, but
right.
It's still a useful feature in some cases. The one that I actually like is called Lookout Mobile Security. Very, very similar features. Gives you a website, mylookout.com, and gives you backup function as well and security protection. So it's your antivirus, anti-malware scanner.
Okay.
It's your backup, so you can back up your contacts and everything to their website, and also gives you remote lock and wipe features through their pro version. So you can look up your device on the web and all of that for the free version with that one. The interesting thing I like about Lookout is it also allows you to do multiple devices through the same account.
Oh, nice.
So if you have an Android phone and an Android tablet, for instance, you can register them all through Lookout and very quickly switch back and forth to from multiple devices on the same website with the same login information.
Very cool.
Now, Where's My Droid is free, but there is a pro version for $3.99. Do you, off the top of your head, do you know the prices on the premium version of My Lookout?
I believe it's about the same. They're usually pretty competitive as far as their the costs go.
And we got another email from Lawrence. Lawrence says, I have an Android smartphone. And I'm due for an upgrade. I'm thinking about getting the new Samsung Galaxy S3. I hear it's available on every carrier, Verizon, T-Mobile, AT&T, and Sprint. Should I stick with Sprint or switch to something like Verizon? I mean, does it matter?
That's a really good question, Lawrence. So the Samsung Galaxy S3 came out in the U.S. just last week. It's now the de facto flagship phone for the Android operating system. It really is top-notch. All the phones have the same hardware specifications. They're all dual-core Snapdragons, 2 gigabytes of RAM. They run Android's 4.0 operating system, aka Ice Cream Sandwich. They even all have the same name, which is kind of a first for an Android phone across all carriers. It's not the Galaxy S3 Fantastic, you know, on Verizon. It's just the Galaxy S3. So, and by all reports, it really is a great phone. Probably the top Android phone right now. So that's the good news. The bad news is not all carriers are created equal. Some have high-speed 4G LTE networks. Some have not-so-high-speed 4G networks. And some are just 4G-ish.
Yeah.
T-Mobile. Tom's Hardware.
Is that your site?
No, not my site. Okay. Tom'sHardware.com. Great site if you actually want to see reviews of devices and hardware. If you're a serious geek. Says that generally Verizon has the fastest networks, but in some regions, AT&T's HSPA Plus network has got them beat. We do recommend that you would check out the network speeds for your area, see who has the fastest. And you can do that. Their PC Mag has a page they keep up to date that shows region-by-region breakdown of the fastest mobile networks. So you just go to www.pcmag.com/fastest-mobile-networks, and we'll also post that link on our website.
Sure. Now, so basically, you're saying that these phones they're completely identical across the carriers. That's really new for Android. Usually, each carrier does their own kind of version of it,
yeah.
Even if it's the same hardware.
Yeah. Well, I mean, hardware is going to be identical. Every carrier is probably going to add their own bloatware. I've got a Verizon phone. They've got all their VZ stuff that they add on to it, which I don't use and I don't need. But
yeah, bloatware is a term of endearment that we use for all these apps and software that AT&T and Verizon and Sprint throw on. That like I remember my Palm Pre, it had the Sprint TV, and I couldn't get rid of it, but yeah. I never used it.
Exactly, so exactly.
Just I have a game. Taking up space.
I have a game I can't get rid of. They put Need for Speed on my phone. It's a terrible game. It works.
I love Need for Speed.
Yeah, this is not the good version.
Oh.
can't get rid of it. So yeah, there's going to be a little bit of difference in just in terms of what's installed, but your phone should have the same capabilities. You just really need to be concerned with probably the speed of the carrier and how much you like the carrier.
Well, yeah. And something that you kind of mentioned that, you know, just because Verizon generally has the fastest speed doesn't mean they're going to be the fastest in an area.
Exactly. Right.
And we can kind of talk for just a brief second about bandwidth, and that's kind of what will limit that is, you know, mm-hmm. how many users are on each person's tower in that given area.
Mm-hmm.
If Verizon has a higher population in that area, more Verizon users means more users per tower, which means that their bandwidth is going to be a little bit slower in that area.
True.
Versus yeah. an area that may not have as many AT&T users, mm-hmm. they're going to be saying, hey, I have priority for this tower. So their phone's going to be acting a little bit faster.
That's true. And the problem is the carriers just throw around the term 4G. Like, they just use it all over the place, and they don't really define it. I mean,
well, let's remind the customers listening to us that 4G isn't defined. There is no specs, as they would say, for 4G at the moment. It has not been spelled out.
Just means fourth generation.
Correct. Right.
No meaning beyond that.
But the problem is that, like, what AT&T and T-Mobile did with HSPA Plus,
mm-hmm.
which is really 3G, third generation technology, they just kind of upgraded it, made it faster.
Mm-hmm.
So they put a faster engine in the same car.
Right.
And they're calling it a new car.
Right.
Instead of saying, oh, no, we just made it faster. So when you compare HSPA Plus, the third generation technology that was mm-hmm. upgraded, to LTE with the true fourth generation technology,
right?
The speed difference is immensely different.
Yeah, yeah.
But like you were saying, though, sometimes you can be on the 3G AT&T HSPA Plus,
and you're getting a faster throughput than with
right
the 4G LTE. And LTE, we should say, is a standard. When Verizon
right.
says this is an LTE phone, that actually does mean something, and it's a good something.
And do you guys have any input on the LTE is better than WiMAX issue?
You know, I'm on Sprint,
yes.
and it is better than WiMAX.
I mean, I don't see. I have Sprint. You know, who's running WiMAX? And
for now, they're killing
now.
It. But
and you know, yeah, I agree. It doesn't have the best service everywhere, but sometimes I get some really fast speeds and some,
yeah.
you know, and a lot more places now, and they're still on WiMAX. So Aaron, what's your take on that?
The thing that I think that's really kind of putting the nail in the coffin for all the other technologies except for LTE is Metro.
Mm-hmm.
People are jumping to Metro from a lot of carriers, including Verizon.
Metro PCS.
They're becoming very, very popular in the big cities, especially Jacksonville, that has a really good network in the Metro area. And they're running LTE now for their 4G phones. So the fact that you now have Verizon on the high end for LTE and now Metro coming around on the bottom with LTE as well, I think it's going to kind of sandwich a lot of other carriers in the middle and kind of force them to the issue, just because now with the Galaxy S3, if they're making the same hardware across carriers, it would be a lot better for manufacturers to only put one type of 4G technology in the phones.
Oh,
right.
Yeah.
And just to clarify, WiMAX is the other 4G technology that came out around the same time as LTE, but only Sprint and one other carrier really picked it up, and once everybody else got on LTE, that became the standard.
And didn't Clear switch from WiMAX over to LTE as well?
Yeah, Clearwire that became Clear. Yeah, it's true.
So there you go.
I want to mention one more thing.
Sure.
For Lawrence, if you really can't make a decision, there's actually an unlocked international Galaxy S3 that you can buy, and it actually has a slightly different set of hardware specs, and has no bloatware because it's not associated with a carrier. But, and this is a big but, it won't work on CDMA networks such as Verizon, T-Mobile, or Sprint.
Very true.
Okay. There you go.
All right, we got another email from Gary. Kevin, can you grab that one?
Sure. Gary says, lately in the news, it seems that all of these sites like LinkedIn, is that for LinkedIn?
Yeah, it looks like he spelled it wrong.
I gotcha.
LinkedIn. we're not picking on you, Gary.
are getting hacked, and I've been hearing everybody talk about how you're supposed to have a separate password for each website that you go to. But how are you supposed to keep track of all these different passwords? I'm not just using something dumb like 123ABC or password as my password. But there's no way I could remember a separate password for each of these sites. I use fairly tough passwords with random letters and numbers. Is that good enough?
That's a really interesting question. I'll take that on first from a sort of programmer standpoint. An interesting thing is that if somebody wants to crack your password and they've got a dedicated computer to do it, and there's no limits to the number of times they can try, Gary, let's say you have an 8-character password. It doesn't matter what characters you've used. They've probably got enough computing power to crack that within about a half hour. Longer is better. They're now saying kind of the new standard for passwords is go ahead and pick 3 or 4 words and slam them together. You know, I don't know, goat, cheese, dog, french fries. That might be a really awesome password because it's so long that if somebody just wants to do a brute force computability attack against you, they're not going to be able to pull that off within the anticipated lifetime of the universe.
That's surprising because I always heard that you weren't supposed to use any words that you could find in the dictionary.
Right. But if you the idea is that you want to make your password long.
Now, that being the case, I know there's still some websites that require like an 8-character limit, but also a combination of letters and numbers. So
that's
all
true.
Websites may not be able to do just, you know, a series of words like that at the moment.
Yeah, because I know some banking sites even, they require that you use special characters. And
absolutely.
They all have different requirements.
There's sites that don't allow that.
True. And I personally use LastPass because I have so many hundreds of passwords to keep track of. There's no way I could do it, and many of them have to be different. But you know what, guys, I think that there is a lot that we could talk about on this subject, and we actually don't have time for it today. So let's table this and let's come back to it next week.
That's a great idea.
Let's cover it a little bit more in depth. But that is all the time that we have for today. Next week we'll be talking about that and also any news that come out of the Google I.O. conference, and of course any questions you got. Our producer is Sean Birch. I'm Ray Hollister.
I'm Tom Braun.
I'm Kevin Clark.
And I'm Aaron Edelson.
And this is Deemable Tech. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next week.